Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Hello, I'm Jane Connors, and welcome to Radio National's Oral History Program Verbatim. Today, we're meeting Rabbi Raymond Apple, Senior Rabbi at the Great Synagogue in Sydney. Rabbi Apple's distinguished career has and has had many facets, encompassing his interests in religious education, ecclesiastical law, and history, among other matters. He's had a long association with the Australian Council for Christians and Jews, and serves as the Senior Rabbi to the Australian Defence Forces. I spoke with Rabbi Apple several days ago in the large and magnificent Great Synagogue in central Sydney.
I was born in Melbourne before the Second World War. My brothers and I were brought up in the suburb of Caulfield, where at that stage there was a very small embryonic Jewish community, quite different from today, where Caulfield is quite a powerhouse of Jewish life and orthodoxy. My family was what I suppose today you would call middle class or possibly lower middle class. My parents did not have very much money, but somehow we seemed to manage. It wasn't until long after the Second World War that my father was able to afford a car. And so if you went anywhere, you went usually by tram, sometimes by bus. If my mother needed to go into town, naturally she would wear a hat and gloves and would dress correctly, because otherwise it just simply wasn't done. Now, this, of course, was a way of life which has now completely disappeared, without all the excitement and the sophistication of life today. I went to school first at, well, I have to tell you the truth, at a little Catholic kindergarten in Dandenong Road. And since there were no Jewish kindergartens in those days, my parents, I suppose, felt they had no option but to send me there. My kindergarten education didn't last very long. One day I came home, I knelt on a chair in the kitchen, and I began saying, "Hail Mary, Mother of God." And of course, Jewish boys don't do such things. I never went back to kindergarten. I don't think that this did me much harm, because in subsequent years, when I became involved in interreligious dialogue, I've often thought back over that strange episode, and I've grinned, but it has made its contribution towards many, many years of, I hope, positive association with members of other religions, and not least the Roman Catholic community. I went to Caulfield North Primary School. That school had something to do not only with my general education, but the beginnings of my Jewish education. Twice a week after school, teachers of the United Jewish Education Board in Melbourne would come and use classrooms with permission of the education department to teach the Jewish children of the school, and I suppose from one or two other neighbouring schools, the elements of Hebrew reading and of Judaism. The first teacher I had, I well remember, she was a lady called Miss Minnie Kearson, one of a small band of maiden ladies who in those days maintained the structure of Jewish education all over Australia. She was not the only one. There were many others. And from them, those who are of my generation learnt the basis which, at least in my case, made it possible years later to become a student of Judaism and of Jewish classics in an intensive way, and to become a rabbi. From Caulfield Central School, I moved to Melbourne High School. I went to Melbourne High when I was just 13. 13 for a Jewish boy is bar mitzvah, the moment when he is when he makes the official proclamation of his membership of the Jewish people and his commitment to Judaism. For me, bar mitzvah meant something else as well. It meant my first pair of long trousers. And going to Melbourne High School when I was just 13, wearing my bar mitzvah long trousers, was really exciting and showed I was really grown up. I spent 4 years at Melbourne High School. In those days, the principal was Brigadier George Langley, who had been in both the First and the Second World Wars, a highly respected member of the Australian Defence Force. At school assemblies, the Brig, as we used to call him, would frequently encourage us with what he called that lovely virtue, courage, something which clearly he had learnt during his wartime career, and which again made his contribution towards my life and career, because very, very often when your life is dedicated to religious work and to helping people with their problems, if you don't have a sense of courage and can't share that with other people, then of course you'll be most ineffective and you'll wonder what you were doing. I joined the school cadet corps and rose to the, I suppose, dizzying heights of being a cadet lieutenant, which meant I held Her Majesty's commission, and as far as I remember, and it's a long time ago, they even paid me 1 shilling per parade. Not that I ever understood very much about money, and I'm afraid I still don't. But to walk through the streets in post-war Melbourne wearing an army uniform and an officer's peaked cap, and sometimes to be saluted by a member of the regular army who saw an officer coming, well, it was a bit flabbergasting. I'm sure the officer realised that he was saluting the cap and not the kid. But again, that played its part in my career, so that many, many years later, when I came to Sydney and became a reserve army chaplain, well, I suppose I looked back over my first steps in the military life, and they also were part and parcel of my development. Subsequently, I became a senior rabbi to the Australian Defence Force, and although it's a civilian appointment and I don't wear a uniform, I'm one of a group of 6 members of the Religious Advisory Committee to the Services, who are entitled, if it really matters, to be treated as 2-star generals. I don't think it makes a great difference, but at least it indicates that the military strand in my career is something which is still developing.
This is Verbatim on Radio National, where we're listening to the memories of Rabbi Raymond Appel.
Let me now turn to the Jewish development of my life as a high school pupil and a teenager. Our family was always associated with an establishment Orthodox Jewish congregation, the St Kilda Hebrew Congregation in Melbourne. For well over 50 years, the rabbi of that congregation was Rabbi Jacob Danglow, a man who moved with such dignity and such military bearing, even when he was over 80, that as a child I felt, well, if I didn't quite understand who God was, when I saw Rabbi Danglow in the pulpit, I thought this was the next best thing to God himself. Rabbi Danglow was an Englishman who had been in Australia since 1905, a man of great culture and urbanity, not a religious fanatic in any way, a sort of person for whom tolerance was so instinctive that I'm sure that any form of bigotry was totally foreign to his nature. His congregation was not only an establishment congregation, but in many ways it might be regarded as, and I hope that those who were brought up in rival congregations will forgive me, this one might well be regarded as the respectable congregation. It was the sort of place where the Jewish gentry would attend services. We were not gentry, but we attended services on a regular basis. We were not so completely observant of Jewish law at home. But nonetheless, regular synagogue attendance was something that we took for granted. Later, as a university student at Melbourne University, I began becoming more interested in studying religion in depth, not just doing the weekly worship thing. I discovered that at Melbourne University Library and also at the Victorian Public Library, there were excellent Judaica sections, particularly at the Public Library of Victoria, where the reserve collection of Judaica, including a number of rare books, was absolutely stunning. I would spend far more time than I could really afford delving into this material and becoming more and more fascinated with the Jewish classics. Now, if I ask myself, does this mean that my faith was deepening? The answer is no. My faith was always there. For me, God was always, and continues to be, part of the family. But what was deepening was my understanding of how great people throughout history had envisioned God and debated things which at first I didn't quite realize were philosophical problems. In the course of those years, this was encouraged in me by a German Jewish intellectual, a former German professor, Samuel Billigheimer, who had come to Melbourne in 1939 as a refugee from Nazism. In Melbourne, he could not find an academic post on the level that his talents would perhaps have suggested. He became a teacher of modern languages at Caulfield Grammar School, and also, on Sunday mornings and two afternoons a week, would teach Hebrew to kids like me, most of whom could not understand at all the depth of his faith and of his philosophy. I think he regarded me as his great success, probably the only one of his students who took his presentations of the Jewish philosophers seriously and subsequently became, well, if not a scholar, at least a student of their writings. So the combination of my own investigations into Jewish literature, the influence of Professor Billigheimer, and the fact that when my fellow students at Melbourne University were asking questions and sometimes finding religion wanting, I asked questions and found religion ever more satisfying. At Melbourne University, I gained degrees in law and arts. The dean of the law faculty was a very bright young man named Professor Zelman Cowan, the same Zelman Cowan who years later was a distinguished Governor General of Australia. I fell out of love with the law and decided at a particular point during my law studies that I was not going to be a practicing lawyer. I thought of other things, but as my religious interests were becoming deeper and deeper, I finally decided that, for me, the future was in religion. Where was I going to go and become a religious teacher, a clergyman, whatever title the future would bring? It had to be overseas because there were no facilities in Australia in those days for a prospective rabbi to study and become qualified. I chose to go to London to a historic seminary called, in those days, Jews College. They have subsequently rather sanitized the title, and they now call it the London School of Jewish Studies.
You're listening to Rabbi Raymond Apple on Verbatim. Rabbi Apple lived, studied, and worked in London from the late 1950s to the early 70s. His first position as religious director for the Association of Jewish Youth took him in and out of 140 Jewish youth clubs up and down the British Isles. He was then appointed minister of the historic Bayswater Synagogue in the West End of London, before moving after 5 years to a better part of town and a seven-year stint with the Jewish community of Hampstead. But in 1972, the chief rabbi at Sydney's Great Synagogue retired and an invitation went out.
I accepted the position, not because I wasn't happy where I was, but because I saw that Australia was not just a sunny place, very different from the grey skies and the cold of London, but Australia was a place that was growing and thrusting and diversifying, and it all seemed exciting, and the Jewish community, as the result particularly of its post-war development, was also becoming broader in its scope and deeper in its affiliation and more exciting in its activity. End of December 1972, I took up office at the Great Synagogue. I've been here ever since. 30 years in one position is not a bad record, and I hope I can say 30 not out. I hope to continue in office for some time yet. Over this period, the Great Synagogue has changed dramatically, and so has Judaism in Australia. The Great Synagogue is the establishment congregation in Australia. We call it the Mother Congregation of Australian Jewry. The first Jews arrived on the first fleet, some 16 or so of them. It took about 3 decades for Jewish life to stabilize, but the work of people like Joseph Marcus, a former convict who had had a good Jewish education on the continent before being sent here with his fares paid by the government, led to the creation of foundations which eventually resulted in the congregation of which the Great Synagogue is the lineal heir. Today, the tendency is rather different. People prefer something a little bit more relaxed and with a little bit less of the ecclesiastical pomposity that used to be the mark of the Great Synagogue. The nature of the congregation, as well as the nature of people's desires in terms of worship, has also changed. Immigration over the years has altered the kaleidoscope of the Australian Jewish community, bringing waves of immigration from many countries, especially in the last few decades, Holocaust survivors, Jews from Egypt, Jews from Hungary, Jews from South Africa, from Russia, from the United States, from Israel. The ethnic makeup of the Great Synagogue congregation has probably resisted many of these tendencies, and it still remains a rather anglicized or Australianized congregation. But the fact that there have been new and sometimes more geographically accessible congregations founded over the last couple of decades all over the suburban area of Sydney has meant that those who maintain their great synagogue connection do so because this is where they feel at home, and this is where the family has always felt that its spiritual center is. To be a Jew in Australia today is something which is sometimes expressed in conventional religious terms, and strict orthodoxy amongst Australian Jews is stronger and more visible than it ever was. However, there is a significant number of Jews in Australia who call themselves secular Jews. Jews by history, Jews by culture, without necessarily being religious in the conventional sense. Now, for my part, I've always felt that it's a pity that a so-called secular Jew is not giving him or herself the opportunity of experiencing the real fullness of the Jewish experience. As far as I'm concerned, as I've suggested, I've never really had, personally, major challenges of faith. But when I see that there are challenges of faith in other people, I just wonder how anyone can possibly manage without seeing or sensing God wherever they are and in whatever situation. For me, every time one of my children was born, I thought that this was evidence that there is a God. When I walk to work across Hyde Park in Sydney, I look at the trees and I look at the plants and I look at nature, and I'm sure there is a God. Judaism has its tenets, its principles, its values, but Judaism does not have compulsory dogmas. It does not hit anyone on the head, at least metaphorically, and say, you must assent to articles of belief, or else you risk excommunication. Belief is not something which can be laid down by law. Belief happens as a result of encounter, as a result of experience. And I cannot insist that a secular Jew should believe. But the way in which I try with secular Jews is to say, you perhaps come for a walk with me through Hyde Park, and we'll breathe the air together, and we'll just see what happens. And if nothing happens, at least we've enjoyed each other's company. Well, this is the story of an Australian rabbi who went away, not from religion, but from Australia, who came back, who is still here, who still finds Australia very exciting, very challenging, who on the whole enjoys his work. And if some of these thoughts are of some interest, well, I'm delighted.
Our guest on this week's Verbatim has been Rabbi Raymond Apple from the Great Synagogue in Sydney. Technical production today has been by Mark Dawn, and I'm Jane Connors from Radio National's Social History and Features Unit.
Listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.